while we're waiting for them, I don't know if on this call we'll have time for this specifically, but I'm wondering if we can walk through our process with you, because while the calls are going really, really well and the clients love it and we're getting results, it seems like we're creating a lot of work for ourselves and we don't have a lot of time for internal meetings. So, you know, Tara and I have been kind of looking at our process and have an idea of what we can cut out, but I think we might be able to fix some things.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Hey guys, Robin Maria, my apologies. I dialed into our conference line.
Hey guys.
How are you doing today, Rob?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm doing wonderfully.
Good.
Why don't we dive right into what it's an organization piece, but I'm very curious as to you guys are the real deal, and I want to help as much as I can. So why don't we, I know this sounds sometimes like you're getting into the weeds, but guess what? We're in the weeds. Well, let's go.
Perfect.
All right, so the question becomes, was that, who was asking that question in terms?
It's Claudia.
Okay, Claudia, why don't you go ahead and give me some of your ideas and your challenges and how I can help.
Okay. So, Rob, I was explaining to Rob Knapp that we're getting great feedback on the calls and the clients love the agendas, the process, the follow-up, but that it's creating a lot of work internally. And, Tara and I have been talking about maybe taking out a part of the process just to free it up, so I just wanted to get Rob Knapp's opinion on our process to see if we're doing something that we could do better. But the way that we're doing it is we'll send out, so at the beginning of the week we'll get together, we'll go through all of the upcoming meetings. Everybody is, we're not on a 24-month calendar exactly, but everybody, we have a topic, so we're kind of there. We'll send the agendas out and prior to the call. And then either Rob or Sean will hold the call, and they are filling out, and this is not part of your process, but we have a template that they fill out during the call, which then allows us to send the follow-up email to the client and identify any follow-up operational items needed in terms of us to the client or the client to us, to make sure that we include that in there. And then we are filing the folders away and getting ready for the next month. But for some reason, it seems like we're, in a lot of instances, creating a lot of work in between. And, this call is taking and the follow-up is taking a lot longer than the hour allotted for it.
All right, so what were you thinking about cutting out?
The template piece that we use. So mine and Tara's thinking over the past couple of days is that the agenda could serve as the template and that they could take notes on it and we could craft a follow-up email from that. So then that would take out, because what happens is I will create the agenda. So we'll all get together, then I'll create the agenda, I'll send it out. Rob or Sean will do the meeting. Then they'll take the time to either fill out the template or Rob, in some cases, will draft his own email and send that out. And then the rest of the team will kind of pull from there the follow-up items. But we were thinking that template might be an additional step that's not necessary.
Anybody else want to throw their feedback in? I mean, I'm fine with using the agenda and just taking notes on the agenda and creating your executive summary from that.
And what we're doing now, hi, this is Tara, and what we're doing now, or at least we started this week, is to prepare the folders for the next month's call. I'm printing the follow-up email to go with the agenda. So that is basically the note that's in the folder for any reference as to the prior call when they're December call. So we don't really need that template. I think it's just more paper and the same information being reiterated in three different fashions.
Yeah, the key is just to not lose. If you have a discussion with somebody and you've agreed to do something, you just have to put it down there, and everybody's got to see that that's an action step.
Yeah, another thing that we've implemented is keeping like a rolling to-do list, and as we're writing up the follow-up email, cutting out, you know, we owe this to you, putting that on one local place where we can all kind of make sure it's happening, it stays on there until it's done, and then we know for sure that everything, or at least where it's one more step that we can keep in, you know, try to stay efficient and make sure things are getting done.
It sounds like you're really thinking through the engineering part of this, which is, you know, time and motion studies. You don't want to do anything you don't have to do while still delivering the, you know, I don't want you to cut out the client interaction, the things that are most important to the client, the executive summary, the agenda. Those are really important. The phone call is really important. Otherwise, you know, how you use the folders, the more efficient you can make them, less paper than, you know, just try and make everything as efficient as possible.
Rob, do you find that there is always follow-up after a monthly call to a client?
No, not always. Oh, I'm sorry. I think she said wrong, Rob. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, that was for Rob Knapp, just say in his studies, because it seems like, and I think that's where a lot of the, a lot of the time is coming from, too. It seems like every single call ends up with two or three action items, and that adds up after a couple of months.
Yeah, I think that will go away. I mean, they're always going to be, when you have big clients, they're always going to be things.
Right.
But, you know, those are not going to, you know, that shouldn't be something that is very painful. I mean, it's just following up on different things that the client needs. Most of them are pretty little. And, you know, it just means that you're getting them done through a proactive phone call rather than a reactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not calling you to send that stock to the university for their charitable donation. You've got that on the agenda, and you're taking care of it before they're even thinking about it. So, you know, based on your schedule, on their schedule of when it needs to be done. So I think you should be, and you'll find that over time you're out in front of them more than you're lagging behind them. And that, to clients, is just unbelievable. It's fabulous.
Okay.
So, to me, that's where you got to be. The other thing to do is to just make sure you're still, you know, that you're still thinking about segmentation as you're doing this, you know, because if it's getting to the point where it's just really hard and you're not keeping up, you may have too many clients.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to think, you know, how can we reduce the number of clients? Getting bigger ones with bigger assets and then reducing the total number. You know, sometimes when we bring one really big one in, we can get rid of two or three little ones, littler ones. So don't let people, you know, hang out. Make sure you're being very diligent about segmentation. It's something that constantly needs to be looked at in terms of time management. I always say to people, you know, if you're too jammed up in your practice, don't cut out the service experience, cut out the number of clients. Cut that back.
Okay, I think that makes sense for me.
Okay. Yeah, just try and become, and you know, and don't hesitate to include everybody in your thinking. You know, this is a team effort. So when you, you know, when you bring something up, just, you know, go ahead and bring it up to the team. Just say, you know, we could be more efficient if we did this. You know, we could be more efficient if we did this. So, you know, becoming more efficient is everybody's job, and not bringing it up because you think somebody's going to be not that happy with your suggestion, that's the wrong thing. You got to do it. Because you're all in this together. I mean, when you're jammed up, everybody's jammed up.
He wants a data call. Cancel.
Okay.
No, sir, that's what he does.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Anybody else having any, I call them engineering problems, in terms of the process or getting stuck on anything, folders, or have you come up with something that is increasing your productivity, or you're seeing a kind of a breakthrough in the process that you're using? Of course, I'm always interested in, very interested in that. All right. Why don't you, Rob, give me an update on, from your point of view, how Supernova is going and any success stories or anything that you need help on?
I would say from my perspective, it continues to grow extraordinarily well. I think that I am at about an 80% compliance. I've still got a couple clients that for reasons I don't even think the reasons matter, but I still haven't gotten them into the 20 or into the monthly calls. I've still got to do that. By and large, the money just continues to come in. I mean, just when I think that, you know, we've kind of seen the best of what is going to happen, I think that it continues to drive assets from the current clients. I also think in the last week we had a meeting with a client. I think it's about a $10 million client. They've got about $2 million at Merrill, another $6 to $8 million outside of Merrill. He leads the investment bank for Rothschild in the energy division here out of the U.S. He's from the U.K. His wife worked for the Bank of England. She works for the Fed now. They were referred to us. One of our folks that we work here within the bank, Jeff Harnoy, who's probably our most productive internal referral source, one of the law firms that he works at, actually, the gentleman's name is Hugo, his wife's name is Sandy. One of their best friends is an attorney at Steptoe & Johnson, a very large firm here. He agreed to interview us to kind of vet us for Hugo and Sandy. He then cleared us, and after our second meeting, we found out, I guess, late last week, that deal got closed. So we're going to go work tomorrow on getting those assets transitioned over. And the one thing that came out of that meeting was, and there were a number of things we did remarkably well in that meeting, much, much better than we've ever done, I think. We're much more thoughtful and mindful about how we did it. But at one point, Sandy commented that she talked to the advisor once or twice a year. And when I heard that, I kind of thought, because I felt like we were in really good shape already, I felt like, well, this is over, this is done. And then Sean stepped in and explained to them the processes and procedures that we use, how we interact with clients, what their expectations should be, and I think it was all like a downhill run from there on out. And as I said, I was really excited because last week, you know, I had just landed in California and was getting ready to do my first day with Chris Carmichael, and I got an email from Jeff Harnoy that he just got a phone call from the client that this deal was all done. So not only do I think it was a great testament to Supernova, but as I had some reservations about disappearing for 3 or 4 days at a time each month to do that, the fact that the first day of the first week that I was gone, we landed what I think is probably a $10 or $15 million deal, made me pretty confident that the world will continue to spin on its axis while I'm in California.
That's a great story. Great story.
Rob, this is Sean. Just to add on to that, too, this, you know, goes and continues to be a difficult time, candidly, to be employed by Wells Fargo, given the headlines. But I think it really speaks to the testament of the team to be able to close that size of a relationship in the midst of this as well, that clients were able to look past that because it still is an issue. I mean, those questions were, you know, still came up. But not only were we able to field that, but then get down to what the client really wanted, I think that truly tells the story of what it is that we're now rebranding ourselves with.
That's wonderful. I mean, it's every firm, as I've always said, you know, has their chance in the box and the hot seat, and it seems to rotate. You get your chance, Merrill has theirs, you know, UBS has theirs, and everybody gets a chance. It's a question of, you know, getting past it, hopefully in an unscathed way, so that you can, and then during it, being, you know, moving the conversation from something which is completely irrelevant and nothing to do with any action you've ever taken to something. Actually do something about it and to relevant conversation. So hopefully that's wonderful to hear that you feel that that this process has gotten you through that and past that, and you know, it's never over until it's finally over, but at least you're frankly, it sounds like you're prospering in what others, I'm sure, are having a really tougher time. So, congratulations. That's great. Testament to your team and your attitude and to your process. So, way to go. Any other giving stories while we're on marketing and any success with kind of the reframing our marketing around the idea of giving? Giving to give?
Well, Tara's too modest to share this story without being kind of invited in to do it, so I'm going to exert my very unreasonable and dominant management style and compel you, Tara, to tell Mr. Knapp about the little notice that you sent Sean and Claudia and all of us over the weekend.
So I live in a fairly large neighborhood, probably about 5,000 homes, and every year we have a volunteer VIP party where three people are awarded a Distinguished Service Award for their neighborhood for volunteerism, and I was one of the recipients, luckily shocked and humbled, but received that on Friday night. So that was a big thing for me, for things that I do in my neighborhood.
Wow. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's just in the spirit of giving. You already are a veteran, so you can be the,
I am a veteran.
You can be the coach of our giving commitment.
I need to balance it a little bit more because I have no laundry done in my house. But besides that, it's a good thing. It definitely comes back, and it definitely gets me knowing a lot of people in the neighborhood that way.
Wonderful, it's wonderful.
Thank you.
So I thought that was really good. And then Sean was at his high school reunion, and he's now gone from just another Irish Catholic lad to the big man on campus, because he was the only one at the meeting whose name was in Forbes the week before, And he had his name on the wall as the one guy from his class who gave money to help build the Fine Arts Center. So all of his time of hanging around with me and accusing me of being a fancy, he's becoming a bit of a fancy himself. He's contributing to Fine Arts Centers.
Congratulations, Sean. That's spectacular at a young age to be recognized like that. Way to go.
Yeah, he said it was amazing how much good father and all of them said they always had their eye on him and always thought he was going to be the cream of the crop. And he said, funny, I don't remember that being the conversation.
They huddled around me a little bit longer and asked how things were going, much longer than I expected after that.
That's funny. Sean, I'm sure they had their eye on you, but it was a different eye, right?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Right. Exactly.
It was the one in the back of the head.
That's great.
The other thing is, too, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, because Sean and I just talked about this uber briefly at lunchtime today. But, you know, one of the other things Sean's contemplating doing is his kids are involved in athletics, and at this age it's primarily soccer, which Sean and I both having grown up in football homes, let me say this, I know little about soccer and care less about it. I don't think Sean, I would have to say he concurs, although he can't say that if his kids are playing, but he feels like that there's a real lack of teaching that goes on in the soccer coaching, that you've got some knuckleheads out there that are looking to win the 7-year-old world championship, and that that kind of what drives them. But he talks about the fact that, you know, these kids, they don't really learn anything. There's no teamwork taught, no inspiration taught, no, you know, hey, everybody's on this, we're in this together, and so on and so forth. So he said, you know, I toyed with the idea of doing that, but almost as soon as those words came out of his mouth, he said, it wouldn't be much of a time commitment. I would only have to do this and that, which kind of said to me he's thinking about it, but he's also hedging it in his own brain right now. So I would be interested to hear what your thoughts would be on Sean, who was a, you know, very successful college athlete and so on and so forth, getting involved in doing those things, not so much from winning the 7-year-old world championship, but trying to instill some of the things that we all know you gain from team sports.
Well, I mean, it's wonderful. You know, probably when I look back on my my experience as a dad, coaching my kids in soccer was maybe one of the greatest of my experiences. And we even made a book, which we were featured in. In terms of coaching them and teaching them from the age of 5 on. So it was a great great thing we did, and I really enjoyed it. And so I highly recommend it. It's part of our commitment to our family. But you'll make great friends, and those guys are going to all be, and gals will be your age. And so I had a bunch of assistant coaches, so it wasn't too difficult. You know, kind of like the more the merrier, and those guys became my very good friends and still friends to this day. So, yeah, I think, you know, between newcomers, which we did when we first went to Lake Forest, and coaching soccer and, you know, my wife's involvement in the community, we had some of our best friends we ever made in our lives were in that community. And we were only there for 6 years, but it was wonderful 6 years. The kids are not going to be that age forever, and so getting the opportunity to have a meaningful interaction with them and their friends and their dad, you know, their dads, it's great. So I highly recommend it. I think it's great.
You know, the other thing is, Rob, Sean and I talk a lot too about how a lot of the folks that we run across these days don't seem to have, you know, I don't even think that I would call it values, but it's a worldview that we kind of gained, and I think a lot of it was from sports and kind of coming up in a decidedly middle-class world. And I think one of the big challenges that everybody, frankly, in this area faces is this is a really affluent area. And so I think that, you know, sports gives you an opportunity to teach some things that I think, you know, in some little you know, industrial town back in the south side of Chicago was easier to teach me as a kid than maybe it is, you know, when you drive past, you know, nothing but 3,000 square foot million-dollar houses on the way to the soccer field every day.
Yeah, and I think people are, you know, families struggle with this idea of how do we instill our values, our family values, you know, into the next generation, and how do we keep from spoiling them while they grow up in a completely different way than we grew up. And so I think there's a lot of value you can have in having family meetings where you do some coaching in terms of how do you pass on your values through the investment process, teaching them charitable giving, not spoiling the kids, still encouraging the kids to have a paper route to work. Well, you know, one of the things that I see that kids don't do today that we all did was we played sports every season, no question, everything, all the sports. But we also worked. So giving kids meaningful work, paper routes or something, you know, today it's so industrialized. Everything is commercialized. You can't even get a paper route, I don't think, anymore. But giving them the opportunity to get involved in charities where they have to go around and collect money or somehow, you know, they have responsibility is very important. I can't tell you. I mean, sports are wonderful, but everybody today keeps their kids away from work all summer while they play sports. And to me, they're missing the opportunity to teach them economics and money management, cash flow, and all the rest of it, which, you know, we did. So, you know, we made wreaths and did, you know, we did everything. You know, picked blueberries and sold them and, you know, we were working every season to make some money and had a paper route my whole life. I'm not saying that I'm perfect, but, you know, I didn't do that much of that with my kids, and I should have. If I went back and did it over again, I would find ways to help them understand business and understand how to manage responsibility. I mean, I still, to this, you know, until recently, still woke up dreaming about my paper route, missing what such and such made. So, you learn at a very early age real responsibilities, and you go on vacation and worry that the kid that you chose to take care of the route was not missing any client, any clients. So, I'll just throw that out there as a guy that's been through the process. So how about other networking? Let me shift a little bit.
One more thing before we leave this.
One more piece. We had a monumental event over the weekend as well. Marina passed her 7.
Oh, congratulations. Way to go.
Thank you.
Way to go, Marina.
and Marina is the star here because we have another person who I think has taken like 4 or 5 times, so Marina's feeling pretty good right now. When you've got somebody around you crashing and burning with that frequency, it makes you a little uneasy at first.
Oh, that's great. Congratulations. That's hard. And you're doing it while you're doing your full-time job. You know, that's the
hard
part.
That's right.
That's hard.
Way to go. Way to go. It sounds like the team is all doing great. I mean, it sounds like a lot of good energy and enthusiasm and responsibility, and it's wonderful. Any other marketing things that I should hear about? Anything that you're doing that has been successful? You've moved down the ball down the field, centers of influence, mastermind groups, or any of that?
No, I think we're continuing to make steady but consistent inroads here with the local centers of influence internally. And we have a strategy out there and in place to meet our other, some other centers of influences. I've got some things out there that I'm working on. And then the other thing that we're going to make sure that we do when we are on board Hugo and Sandy is to right away let them know that we're going to go sit down and meet with their CPA firms and these other folks so that we start to make that part of the onboarding process right away so that we start to meet these folks much sooner in the game.
Smart. Really smart. That's great. I'll give you a quick story, which makes me believe in this mastermind group, formal or informal, however you want to do it. But I've been struggling with trying to find, how I've been doing this for 10 years with Supernova, and I'm 70. I don't want to do it forever, but I want it to be transitioned. So, like many of your best clients, they're thinking of this transition, but they really don't know what the hell they're doing. And I'm pretty much one of those. So finding somebody to lead a team like I've got, or to buy it, or to, you know, what do I do? So I met with a CPA, and we were talking, and he said, yes, I've got this group of one is a business broker, another is a consultant, another is a lawyer, I'm the CPA. So we have this group, and I said, you're a mastermind group. He goes, well, I don't know what that is, but we're just a group of friends that get together once a month, and we talk about how to help clients transition their businesses. And so he's introduced me, and I'm going to meet with a guy that's, you know, talks about how do you franchise your idea and turn it into a franchise business. So that's going to be fun for me. But part of it was such an interesting group that meets regularly but doesn't call themselves a mastermind group. The other thing that's interesting is they don't have a financial advisor in the group. So this is going on in every community when it comes to the most important clients we have, which are our small business clients. They're all going through this at record numbers because of their baby boomers are transitioning into the next generation. And to me, this is your, you know, you're good at this. You're probably, your clients are bigger, but there's, it doesn't matter, you know, size-wise. They're all going through the same thing, whether they're going to sell out to a private equity company or they're going to sell out and go public or they're going to do something else. They're all thinking the same thing. And to me, if you don't have one of these groups or aren't aware of a group like this, I would go out there and find this group, because if it doesn't exist, then start it, because these guys have been doing this for probably 15 years, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of it. So with that, in my community, my associate, her dad went through this, and I consulted with him when I was at my previous firm and helped him make some decisions regarding selling and all that. And she, you know, he still thanks me to this day for that time I took with him. So I think it's a place you guys can be of huge help. You know, we talk about helping. You can be a huge help and have, make some good friends and do some really big business. So any comments on that? Maybe you're already doing it.
No, we're not, Rob. I'm actually wanting to look at trying to get a couple of those put together. I've identified a CPA that we've actually sent two clients to that I need to get out there and reach out to and touch him. We've got a couple of attorneys that we know. Frankly, I think I need a couple of other attorneys, because some of these attorneys I met through one of our other internal referral source guys, and
I'm not sure that most of the deals that I would send them, they might not kick back over his way. So I absolutely want to do that, and I'm working on that a bit now, so I may want to talk to you a little bit more about how I structure those things and find some of those folks.
Yeah, do you see how what a huge advantage would be to have this network of people that specialize in helping people transition their businesses and sell their businesses and franchise their business, whatever, private equityize their business, you know? I just think I've thought about it. In fact, I use that example for doctors selling their businesses. I don't know why I didn't sort of talk about it as a general business idea because we always talk about centers of influence, but specifically with a niche of clients selling their businesses or transitioning their practices. So I think it's really a smart thing to do.
I agree.
So it's kind of niche mastermind group. So think of it that way, and it's pretty tight. And you could do it in, it could be for technology companies, it could be, you know, so you could get even tighter in terms of what you were specialized in, which would give you more of a national kind of reputation, which you guys already have a fabulous reputation. But I think just this would be a big help formalizing it a little bit. In terms of centers of influence generally, I think I've told you the stories of the advantage of meeting monthly. I was very pleased to hear these guys meet monthly. And, you know, not everybody's always going to be able to make it, but he said he's pretty diligent about making it. There's always business being referred back and forth. So in general, just meeting with centers of influence and being there and showing up and trying to help them, I think will generate great networking, connecting opportunities, et cetera. And the way I would do it, I would have 6 centers of influence that I would consider be my kind of my on-field first teamers. And then I would have, and I'd meet with them monthly. So that would be maybe a commercial realtor, maybe a high-end residential realtor, a CPA, an attorney, maybe an independent of my mastermind group, a business broker. It just depended on what I wanted. So I'd meet with those guys and be my on-field first teamers, and then I'd have on-deck group, a group that I would meet with quarterly. And they'd be the next level. So if one of these people retired or just decided they didn't want to participate anymore or I wanted to get rid of them, I'd have somebody on deck that I could plug in. I was meeting with regularly, but not as regularly. So that would be another CPA, another attorney, another business broker, and so forth. So I'd have one in play and then one on deck. And then I'd have this separate mastermind group for different niches. Say this was the niche for businesses that were being sold. Maybe there's another niche which was helping the elderly, you know, elder care kind of thing. A niche where you help them, for example, prepare their homes. They call it staging, you know, somebody that helps stage the house for sale, somebody, a consultant to help them find the right community to move into. Obviously, there needs to be a financial guy to make sure that they're prepared economically for it and meets with the kids and everybody's aware of what the costs are going to be and why the decision is to move into that particular home, that community. There might be a nursing facilities that can help on occasion to come in outside of the organization to just check on mom while you're in Florida or away for a month or whatever. So I've been through all that with my mom, and I will tell you, having the Rolodex for that stuff is invaluable. Even if you think, you know what, I'm not going to make a lot of money doing this, but it's such a fabulous service. You know, you talk about giving. This is a fabulous service. And baby boomers are, you know, the sandwich generation where they're caring for their parents still, and they're caring for their kids, you know, because the kids are having a tough time, you know, getting the house, getting started and all that stuff. So they're being kind of drained on both ends, right? So this could be a big help to the average baby boomer going through this, who is your client. And so I just say that and throw that out as another kind of golden Rolodex opportunity to build your ability to serve your clients, which is, again, the greatest thing we can do. So any comments on that?
No, I think those are good things that we need to get built into, like, the next, you know, 60 to 90 days, so that in 2017 we can put them together, start putting them together, and then see them bear fruit in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't do everything, but there's certain things that you can just say, oh, by the way, I've got the right guy for you to help you with that, you know. And the people are just so appreciative of that. So, you know, making a conscious effort to get those names together and meet with people that know that business and can give you good advice is incredibly valuable. So, yes. So, speaking of that, this is our 12th session together. So now what I hope and encourage us to do together is to build our business plan for 2017, 2018, and even 2019. And those don't have to be as detailed, but to just have some numbers where we're all comfortable that is a reasonable target going out, say, 3 years, and then work it back to what are we going to do this year, and what is each of the 5-star responsibilities to get to our goals. So Vice President of Planning, Implementation, Brand Management, Marketing, and Leadership. So where are we now, and then where do we want to be by the end of 17 in each one of those things? And then just start to put together an action plan for doing those, and then a tracking system to hold ourselves accountable. And this is what I would like you to do. I would like you to do that, and then I would like to have you present that to your management team, which is part of your marketing effort to get them to buy into why you all are very different from everybody else, why you should be the ones that they refer to. And then at the end of 17, bring the results of that plan down here to Florida, and we'll begin to build our plan in detail for 2018. So that would be the sort of the vision of where I would like you to go and how I'd like you to get there. So this is going to take some effort. Maybe it takes an off-site for you to, spend a day or half a day to get this done, maybe some homework ahead of time, get together, share it, figure out how are we going to track it on our game board, giving board, and then our scoreboard, how we hold ourselves accountable to it, and then how you share that with me. So that's the big homework for the next the next 9 formal sessions. So I'd like to have you, if you could, meet together, talk about this, come up with a plan, and then email me the plan of how you're going to do this, what your timeline is for getting the plan done, and the timeline for executing it. Does that sound fair?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a good time to do it. Here we are in November. You know, perfect time, taking a little bit of time together to formally plan this out, I think makes all the sense in the world. And then going into 17, hitting it hard and would be brilliant. So
that's perfect. That sounds like a good strategy, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. If you need more time with me or you want more time with me, just yell. Okay?
Okay.
I'd be happy to work on this with you. I really want this to go well, and I want you all to be very successful with it.
Perfect.
Okay?
Thanks for your time, sir.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.